I think we might do well this evening to spend a few moments reading from a rather obscure Old Testament book, the book of Habakkuk, if you'll turn there with me. Not to scare you this evening, but I'd like to read the entire book. More comforting news is it just has three chapters, and they are not that long. The book of Habakkuk. As you may well know, and I'm sure you do, the major and minor prophets all write from Isaiah all the way through Malachi of the time just before, and in some cases during and just after, in the case of Malachi about 100 years after the captivity. And that captivity serves somewhat as a historical marker around which all of these books, major and minor prophets, are written. And by the way, the only difference in the major and minor prophets are the length of the books. There's no difference in the quality or the thrust or the messages of the books based upon their being major or minor. It's just the length of the books themselves. But this book of Habakkuk is especially interesting and intriguing. And we'll make comments after we read, but let's begin by reading at chapter 1 and verse 1. The burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and you will not hear me? Even cry out to me, cry out to you violence, and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore, the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, perverse judgment proceeds. Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded. For a work, I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes, and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this power to his God. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net. They gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet. Because of them their share is sumptuous and their food plentiful. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected. And then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it, for the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Indeed, because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man. And he does not stay at home because he enlarges his desire as hell, and he is like death and cannot be satisfied. He gathers to himself all nations and heaps up for himself all peoples. Will not all these take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, woe to him who increases what is not his. How long? And to him who loads himself with many pledges, will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken who oppress you? And you will become their booty, because you have plundered many nations. All the remnant of the people shall plunder you because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and all who dwell in it. Oh, woe to him who covets evil gain for his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of disaster. You have shameful counsel to your house, a cutting off many peoples and sin against your soul. For the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the timbers will answer it. Woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not of the Lord of hosts that the peoples labor to feed the fire, and nations weary themselves in vain? The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to your bottle even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. You are filled with shame instead of glory. You also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. The cup of the Lord's right hand will be turned against you, and utter shame will be on your glory. For the violence done to Lebanon will cover you, and the plunder of beasts which made them afraid because of men's blood, and the violence of the land and the city and of all who dwell in it. What profit is the image that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lies, the maker of its mold, should trust in it to make mute idols. Woe to him who says to the wood, awake, to silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet in it there is no breath at all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. A prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet on Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known in wrath. Remember mercy. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. He had rays flashing from his hand, and there his power was hidden. Before him went pestilence, and fever followed at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills bowed. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction. The curtains of the land of Midian trembled. O Lord, you were displeased with the rivers. Was your anger against the rivers? Was it against the sea that you rode on your horses, your chariots of salvation? Your bow was made quite ready. Oaths were sworn over your arrows. You divided the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered its voice and lifted its hand on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. And the light of your arrows they went at the shining of your glittering spear. You marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations in anger. You went forth for the salvation of your people, for salvation you with your anointed. You struck the head from the house to the wicked by laying bare from foundation to neck. You thrust through with his own arrows the head of his villages. They came out like a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was like feasting on the poor in secret. You walked through the sea with your horses through the heap of great waters. When I heard, my body trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the field and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet. He will make me walk on my high hills. An interesting read. I mentioned a moment ago that all of these prophets, major and minor, in some way or another, before, during, after, and sometimes some distance after by way of time, all revolve themselves around the captivity by which God punished his people by using neighboring nations. But aside from those we have in the Bible, there are other prophets as well. They are mentioned by Jeremiah, for example, in Jeremiah chapter 6, when he says, from the prophet to the priest, they're all given to covetousness. He makes reference to these false prophets when he will say in that same sixth chapter, they say, peace, peace, and there is no peace. There were opposing voices to these at the time and during the time. And those opposing voices that had more pleasing words were better received. These words at the time were not well received at all. In fact, many of those who wrote the words, such as we just read, they were persecuted. In the case of Isaiah, they were sawn asunder, we believe. As Jeremiah, they were thrown into prison. And yet, when all is said and done, and the Old Testament Bible was by God's providence put together, vouchsafed by Jesus quoting from it so often in the New Testament, all those false prophets with their false prophecies don't find themselves in the Bible except by way of derisive mention of the real prophets. What we have for us, protected of heaven and given to the ages, are books such as we just read. Books that don't say what you might wish they said. And with our very brief time we have remaining, I'd like to look with you at just three different passages, one from each chapter, that I think really set the tone for the entirety of what Habakkuk is saying. Yes, there's some back and forth, especially the first of the book where Habakkuk is giving his complaint. Why are you seeing all of this, the Lord not doing anything about it? And God answers him, but perhaps not the answer he wants. And so then he requests again the same basic, much like the book of Job, where Job's friend and Job himself wonder why this is continuing to go on. And God answers Habakkuk, not in the same way he does Job, in a dismissive way of saying you're not in the league to even ask the questions. But instead makes a couple of things very, very, very clear, which brings us to the third chapter and the right spirit that Habakkuk has, and anybody in a circumstance like this ought to have, including perhaps you and me even today. You notice in chapter 1, after Habakkuk mentions the problem, how long shall I cry? He's answered by the Lord in verse 5, look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you. It's interesting, I've heard a number over the years of my preaching and read some articles in which that verse were lifted out of context as if to say God has good things in mind for you and you have no idea the good things God has in mind for you. It's a favorite verse of the health and wealth televangelists. See, God's promising you won't even believe what's going to happen to you. It's so wonderful. Well, I think God does work wonderful blessings in the lives of his people. And regardless of that, all things work together for good to those who are his, as Romans 8:28 says. That's not what this is saying. What's being worked by the Lord is not some wonderful blessing of peace and prosperity. What is going to be done is complete devastation. To the extent you won't believe what's going to happen. The ugliness of the captivity itself, the horrendous loss of life and engaged in such, the cruelty of the nations about against the nation of God's people. It was an ugly thing to behold. And that's the context of what promise is made here. He's not saying to Habakkuk, it'll be all right. Just hang on and things will get better. No, he's saying it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And there are some things coming that if I told you about them, you wouldn't even believe me. In terms of what, and sure enough, historically, that's exactly what happened. Long story short, the neighboring nations that were more evil than God's people, but they weren't God's people, were used to wreak punishment upon God's people. And for a while, Jeremiah is concerned about that. But then comes to understand, look at chapter 2. Another favorite passage from the book is the last 20th verse. In fact, in all honesty, we were singing a song earlier. It was in the right side of the book. I can't remember the name of the song, but across from it was this song, "The Lord is in His Holy Temple," and from the book of Habakkuk. And that's when I thought perhaps that might be a good place to look this evening because of its relevance to some things we're seeing today, not just in terms of world events, but in the way we frame them, in the way we look at them. And here in this well-known, in fact, probably the best-known verse in all the Bible, in all the book of Habakkuk, aside perhaps except for the just living by faith in verse 4 of chapter 2. "The Lord is in His holy temple, and all the earth keeps silence before Him." Again, that's more than just a thought as we get our minds ready for worship. It's more than just a worshipful song to keep in mind that we need to be solemn and reverent as we come before the throne of God. It means in the context of this book, much what God said to Job in the book bearing his name, and that is, when it comes to arguing with me, God would say, questioning what I am doing, God would say, best to keep silence. God has never been in the position of looking for help in terms of advisors. Kings have their advisors that sometimes become yes men. Presidents have their staff, and beyond that, they have those who give them special advice. But God, no, he doesn't have any advisors. He doesn't need advisors. He doesn't accept advisors. You might remember the last part of the book of Romans in chapter 11, after Paul has for some time made the point that God's decided Jew and Gentile alike have equal access to the gospel. And then as if to push back on the idea, well, don't like that idea. I don't care for that way of doing things. He makes it very clear, who's known the mind of the Lord? Who's been his counselor? Who's first given to him and it should be given back to him again? In other words, God's beholden to nobody. God owes no answers to anybody. God does not need our advice. He hasn't sought our advice. He won't accept our advice. God is God and we are the created, not the creator. We're the thing molded, not the molder. We're the clay. And so in terms of what's going to happen, best to keep silence before him. The questions Habakkuk asks are answered in their own way, somewhat clearly, somewhat vaguely, but they're answered. Basically saying, it's going to get worse before it gets better. At the end, when all of it's said and done, you'll look back and realize the glory of the Lord, as we do even now. We view that time of captivity and the return from it in a historical lens, which they couldn't possibly have had at the moment. And those living through history never do see it, as it's seen later looking back on it. God did work out wonderful things in terms of destruction, but also wonderful things in terms of blessing over the years. And eventually the Christ came and changed everything. But these questions, best to keep silent. Doesn't mean we're not going to have them. Nothing wrong with having the questions. What's wrong is obsessing with them to the point of falsely blaming or accusing or charging God. And I mentioned Job more than once already this evening, but one thing that separated Job from his friends is that the Bible says in more than one time in that book that Job did not sin with his mouth. He didn't charge God foolishly, as it puts it in a different place there. He didn't go over the line of obsession with asking these questions of God, that he put God on trial, as it were. The furthest Job ever went was saying, I wish I could talk to him face to face and get some answers to my questions. Well, Habakkuk is put in a place somewhat like that in God's response to him. And the ultimate, final, consummate answer to all of this is, let all the earth keep silence before him. Which leads then to the grand conclusion at the end of the book of Habakkuk. You talk about a melancholy way to end a book. The very opposite of saying peace, peace, is what he says here. When, again, read verse 17 and 18 of chapter 3. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord, I will joy in the God of my salvation. I can't help but once again make reference to Job, who said, though he slay me, yet will I serve him. Well, he misunderstood where his suffering came from, but that's the right attitude. Though he slay me, yet I'll still serve him. Habakkuk, when all is said and done, even with unanswered questions in a large sense of the idea, not understanding any of it, much less all of it, knows enough from what God says to keep silent and let God be God, and realize when all is said and done, even when at the moment times don't seem to be the best, in fact, when they have devolved into what seems to be the very worst, when nothing seems to be going right and the whole world seems to be flying out of control, our job is not to question God, but to rejoice in the Lord and joy in the God of our salvation. It's hard to do. It's easy to rejoice when times are good and times are peaceful and nothing but prosperity looms on the horizon. It's difficult to rejoice in times that are tough and seem to be getting tougher day by day. Which makes this a very relevant book for what's going on in the world around us right now. I wonder about what the future holds. I don't know, nor do you. God does. I'll leave it to Him. I don't know, I wonder. As Austin mentioned this morning after the service, why God allows such horror to go on and sees it and does not respond. That was Habakkuk's question. And the only answer that God gives him is that it's going to continue. Don't question. Be silent and realize when all is said and done, I am God. Rejoice in my salvation. And like I say, there is a wonderful blessing in looking at things centuries later, looking back on them, which no generation has ever experienced for their own time. We look at the Civil War differently now than they lived it during the time. We see World War II differently now than they did during the time. And we can't possibly frame what's going on now, as folks will if the Lord tarries his coming, sometime past now looking back on it. But the one God that supersedes time and schedules and wars and boundaries is the God of heaven, who's been around before the world started, and he'll be around after the world ends, who's everlasting from everlasting as God. And it's ours to rejoice and in faith to worship and to serve, and it's His to be God. Now there's a part of me that wishes, as we close, I had something more positive to say. And I'm sure Habakkuk, as he wrote these words, maybe thought the same thing. This is what heaven wants me to write. I sure wish it were more positive. Well, the positive is God is still God and He's in control. And it does seem a bit pessimistic to say perhaps things will get worse before they get better. Nobody wants to hear that. I can't tell you that about our situation because I don't know what happens next. But I trust God. As the old saying goes, we may not know what the future holds, but we do know who holds the future. If you're with us tonight and the invitation is that to which you're subject, please don't put off what you should do, but come now as together we stand and sing.